Because we live in a very individualistic society here, you know, Western country, and we're taught and grew up respecting each other's independence. Asian, obviously, mentality is very collectivist. Yeah. Particularly the family environment here. And there's a lot of rules. There's a lot of formalities and cultural requirements that you have to consider. Well, like if someone passes away within a certain period of your wedding, like let's just say that you would have to push your wedding back because if it's within that time frame, it's considered bad luck.
And how much money would that cost?
Before we get started on today's episode, we would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is recorded, the land of the Darug people. We would like to acknowledge and pay respects to our elders past and present and the next generation coming through. Now, onto today's episode. Welcome to the Level Asian Podcast, another one of our solo episodes. In this one, we're unpacking our own perspectives and experiences around relationships, marriage, and starting families. What are the expectations of Asian traditions we should be upholding? Are there conflicts around being in mixed race relationships? Do Asian parents use their children as a badge of honor? And what about Asian masculinity and beauty standards across Eastern and Western cultures? We answer all of your burning questions and topic suggestions and more. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Level Asian Podcast. We're back with another solo episode. Hope you guys enjoyed the last one. Got a lot of good feedback so far. And
we rambled a bit.
We rambled a lot.
Yeah.
But today we're going to be talking about some topics that we want to talk about, but also a lot of listeners have submitted as well. So these are topics around relationships, including dating and marriage. In this room right now, all of our hosts have very different experiences. Mm. We've got either getting married, haven't been married, got a kid on the way.
And not married.
And not married, yeah. We've got someone who's against marriage and then someone who's indifferent about marriage.
Wait, which one are we?
Yeah, you're going to have to self-identify.
All right. So this all includes as well parent expectations, communication, respecting traditions around Asian marriages. How do we teeter the line between Eastern and Western marriage traditions? And then we'll get into things around having kids, pressures of finding someone, especially the conversation between having no boyfriend or no girlfriend in high school, but as soon as you get to uni, there's that expectation of having one, as well as females versus males, expectations, etc. All right, ready to get into it?
Where do you want to start?
So who's getting married soon?
That would be me. That's if I make it there.
What do you mean? Are you getting cold feet?
No, I'm joking. I got a funny story, bro.
Okay.
Like, so I am technically getting married on that day, but it also is my birthday.
And what's the date?
Okay, well, 1st of April.
So it's also April Fool's Day.
Yeah, April Fool's Day. I thought it'd be funny. I always, for some weird reason, do like special things on my birthday, partly because I just don't want to do a double celebration. I just want to do it in one go, and I'm lazy. So, and plus, I don't have birthday parties or birthday events much. I'm actually very lazy. I think when I was young, I did a lot of it. So now I just can't
like
be bothered.
Like kids' birthdays.
No, like my own birthday. Like,
celebrating your own birthday. Yeah.
Yeah. Because when I was young, I didn't actually do much birthday celebrations. So I did a lot of it when I was a teenager. And then after that, I kind of burnt out and gave up on it. Mm. So, crazy stories. But like, you know, the birthdays I had, there was some funky things that happened. Like a broken toilet. We had some crazy stories, you know. People getting hurt all the time. People going to hospital. Like, there's just a lot of things that happened when I had my birthdays.
Are you sure you want to do your wedding on this day as well?
Yeah. So, it's true. But it's a celebration. So, it should be a good event.
Yeah.
So, I'm having my wedding on the 1st of April.
And it's a big wedding as well.
Mm. Yeah, it's a big one.
Yeah. I know we were talking about it. And
yeah. So, there's, we're hoping, if I have any friends, about 250 plus people going. Yeah. So it's bloody, bloody expensive.
Yeah, it would be.
This is one of the things about weddings and like, you know, my thoughts are like, I remember talking about Costa weddings with Iris and we were saying, I'd rather like elope and just go traveling or whatever. But obviously you got different values around this and, you know, how you sort of perceive
like
weddings.
It's so weird for me because before I used to think about eloping, right? Because I just don't hang out with the last 3 or 4 years, I feel like I haven't been hanging around with friends and family much. Yeah. I've lost lost touch with a lot of them. And a lot of them have been complaining. So I thought, you know what? Let's have a big, big event and like, you know, bring everyone together. Let's celebrate.
Right.
Like, and also it's like for me, a birthday and wedding is a celebration for everyone and admiring, like, you know, and respecting all the people that have been part of my life.
Okay. That's the one gripe I have with weddings, which is weddings now feel very self-centered. And that's like, that's just my opinion. Not that, you know, yeah. anyone else who, you know, like it's your night of nights. But the way I see weddings should be, or at least the way I would like to approach a wedding is to thank and celebrate and involve everyone who's been part of your life. And I think if weddings have evolved into like literally like, it's like watching a show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole sequence and there's a whole bunch of things. Like I'm quite controversial when it comes to weddings as well. And registries, don't even get me started about registries, but you know, like
you gotta have, you got a very, well, different view about,
I don't weddings. Like attention.
Yeah.
Well, that's for one.
Yeah.
Like I feel very awkward being the center of attention for an entire day.
Yeah.
Even though it is your wedding and you know, it's about the couple and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I'd rather divert the attention to everyone else.
Uh-huh. I've seen a wedding where, like a bunch of entertainers, like there were singers and the family itself were all musicians or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was just entertainment the whole wedding. Like everyone, the group.
It was a show.
Yeah, it was a show. Yeah. Literally for the entertainment for all the guests. So mm-hmm. it was pretty cool. Korean guys, Korean family getting married and they were just entertaining all their guests. That was pretty cool, I have to say.
Mm.
And it wasn't, yeah, self-centered and about the bride and groom. But I actually don't think it being a problem because it's a celebration of love, you know, and the love is about the bride and groom and mm-hmm. how their love story started and how it's not ending, but how it's going to
new chapter.
Yeah. New chapter.
Mm.
So it's pretty cool, but yeah, I understand where you're coming from
yeah.
too. Cause
I'm saying like, if that's you, that's you. But I think a lot of people go into weddings not wanting that and end up mm-hmm. doing the wedding that everyone seems to do.
Mm-hmm.
And like we keep talking about self-awareness, like this is one of those things.
Yeah, right? I did get mad at my partner one time. We had we were talking in the car, and she said, "You got to decide on this." And this is like 12 months before the wedding event. We didn't even have a venue. It was just 12 months before we even chose a date, right? So we chose a date in April, obviously, but this is like March this year, and I got really mad at her because she was like, you got to decide on this. You got to decide the groomsmen's. And then I then know how much I can budget. And then I know what kind of gifts I need to buy my bridesmaids.
Yep.
And what I'm going to do for them. And like, you know, I need to organize all this stuff for my bridesmaid. And I said, hold on a second. Why is it about the bridesmaids? Isn't it about us?
Mm.
And that's the part where I was a bit uneasy about it. Because it's like, we're doing our wedding for us, not for like the bridesmaids. So why do you have to plan for the bridesmaids? Why do you have, like, I get the planning,
mm-hmm.
but it shouldn't put stress on us, especially 12 months in advance. So I was like, I don't feel comfortable with this situation.
So what happened then?
I kind of got mad and then she said, yeah, you know what? You're right. So we stopped talking about it for a few months.
But it got raised again.
Yeah, it got raised after. But like it's closer to the date than I was okay and comfortable talking about it. It's just 12 months before happening. I just felt very uncomfortable changing my plans and figuring out and making a decision on who are my groomsmen, how much I'm going to spend, and who she was going to choose and what she was going to do. Like I love the fact that she's so carefree and she wants to organize all this stuff, but I also don't want her to feel like as if
to stress like a job, right?
Yeah. Like, cause I don't want to put so much effort in it and then not really care about herself.
Mm.
And that's what I felt like she was doing.
She was putting other people in front of you guys basically.
Yeah. She wanted to like, you know, organize a color that would suit them, you know, the color of the dress.
Mm.
She wanted to find the presents to give to him. And I was like, but why do you have to do all that stuff? I didn't get it.
Mm.
But us boys are very different. Mm. Us boys just,
I think we're more simple.
Yeah, we're very simple. It's like, okay, where's the bucks going to be at, guys? So yeah. The funny thing is, but probably shitting on my boys, but the boys said to me, the bucks isn't for the grooms. It's for us boys that have been married for so long. That's what they said. So
it's their one night of nights as well.
It's their one night of events where they could, you know, go on a trip without their partner or without their kids.
The old ball and chain. Yeah, your boys really aren't selling the concept of marriage very well to you.
Yeah, this is let's not drop names then.
I'm sure they're joking. Like, I'm sure they're mucking around about it, but they just said, Davey, it's not about you. It's about us, all right? So anyway, and I said, yeah, stuff you. And I said, I'll do what I want. And then they're like, yeah.
No, I can see what you mean as well. I think partly it's I think for myself and even, you know, Iris, we don't like being the center of attention, even if it's our wedding night, like even if it's our wedding. So I think we like to, I guess, you know, we've spoken about it a few times, not that we've done any planning and that sort of stuff, but we like things to be more intimate, non-conventional. So, you know, white dress, you know, like big ballroom, you know, first dance, all that sort of stuff. Completely out the window.
I've never understood the first dance concept.
You never understood it?
It like, I understand the logic behind it, but it just seems so weird.
I think it's a symbolic thing, right? Like, what's...
But you're standing there in the middle with everyone watching and you're just doing like this dance. I think
it's
like
a Snow White type of thing, right? Or is it Snow White or Cinderella?
I don't think it's Snow White, man. Like, Snow White got poisoned and then went to sleep.
I think it's a religious thing. That's
Sleeping Beauty.
Which one is the one where they dance in a ballroom?
Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast, yeah. So maybe it's just they want to be like a fairy tale.
But it's been like this for a long time, the whole first dance thing. And everyone does it.
Yeah.
But I'm the same. I don't quite understand it.
I don't get the cake.
What about it?
I don't eat the cake. Like, I'm too drunk, far into it to even eat the cake by that time.
Okay, so this is what I think the problem is. A lot of, you know, people feel like they're obligated to do all this tradition.
That's what I mean. The routine of it, right? It's like, routine. I got it. These are the 10 things that the wedding always has to have. This is what constitutes a wedding.
And they don't know why.
You have to follow it. They don't know why. They just do it.
I'm going to lose my missus by this, this podcast. I'm just saying.
You going to do a first dance?
Yeah, I think so. That's what she wants.
Right. But maybe she has a good reason for it.
Well, okay. I want to hear other people's stance on this, but because my stance is very funny. It's just like, whatever she wants, let's just do it. This is the only thing she asks for me. Like, and I know it's going to make her happy. Every time we go to a wedding, I don't know what's been going on in the last 6 months, maybe because we're engaged. She gets so lovey-dovey, like, you know, oh, look at this, look at that, look at that. She's just videoing, recording, being so happy. And maybe she's just like, you know, she always wanted this when she was a kid.
Mm.
And now that, you know, she's seeing her friends go through it and then she's hoping
you're getting cocky about it, right?
Yeah. And it's cool. I like it. I really enjoy seeing her be like that. It's like, you know, she gets to realize her dreams and she's really happy about it. So it kind of makes me happy.
Okay. So moving on to Viv, as a little girl, did you always think about your marriage?
No. I have only ever been to one wedding or one official wedding as a guest, which is Lisa's wedding. And like that one seemed like a pretty cool party and it wasn't too much attention on her. Like it was like enough, but it was still celebrating everyone. But I have never had the image of getting married as a dream path or anything like that. I've never aspired to it or thought about like the white dress and everything. So in my mind, marriage is like, one, until recently, I didn't think I wanted to get married. But two, if I did get married, it'd be a nice casual party with all family and friends. And like, it's just chill. And I wouldn't even know what rules to follow, like these 10 steps or whatever. I just wouldn't
know. Well, I think
know.
I just learned it through going to a lot of weddings.
Yeah, exactly.
You just see it.
Whereas I haven't been to a lot of weddings, only one.
Mm.
So I wouldn't even know what to follow.
I'm saying like weddings, we were saying like literally even if we could have like a beach wedding, like a literally casual, like almost like a white party. Like everyone just dresses in white. Mm-hmm. Everyone's casual. Long table.
Good
everyone
food.
Chilling out. If it's a day wedding, that's sort of how we... Like, I think Iris shared with me, like, there was, and it's very trendy now, like, in places like China where they do it in these beautiful, like, backdrop places, like, you know, like, somewhere in the Guilin, which is, like, the rolling mountains.
Mm.
They do it in the, sort of, the tall grasses, and they set up, like, this sort of, like, a, you know, long table of, you know, 20, 25 guests, and there's, like, live music.
It's
and
for Instagram, just, though. I feel
no,
like
it was a real wedding.
I know, but like, I feel like those weddings are more for the gram rather than
maybe
for
the
experience.
Maybe
right?
Some of them are, but I actually wouldn't. I feel like I would enjoy that more,
really,
than a formal wedding. Like, I mean, there are some aspects of like the wedding that, you know, like speeches, you know, obviously the ceremony, that sort of stuff. But I think it's more like the attire, like what you wear. Probably more of the traditional stuff that I don't quite feel like I need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there still should be like hallmarks of a wedding. But I think, you know, our sort of thoughts or vision behind it is very different to a more traditional wedding, you know, and in the way that we would do it. Even like destination weddings, for example, versus...
I love a destination
wedding.
Yeah,
doing one in Sydney.
Oh, you love them.
Well, like the idea of it. No. Like the idea of having a destination wedding, also you don't have to invite all the people you don't want to invite.
What happens if you get invited to a destination? Like, let's just say I got married in Thailand and I invited you. How would you feel right now?
If it's you and it's Thailand, I would go.
Yeah.
But if it's someone else that I'm not close enough with, I wouldn't, like my circle of friends that I would go on a destination wedding with or have a destination wedding, is small enough for me to support and go.
Like you're talking about the money side of things, right?
Yeah, the money.
Like you're giving people pressure, pressure that they have to pay for their own.
You got to understand the pressure and the money right now because everyone has to drop everything.
Exactly. See, if it was someone else that I wasn't as close and there was-
I didn't even know we were that close, but yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
No, but like- But like I see you often enough. Also, you're fun to be around.
Yeah.
And also Thailand's not, it's not like it's France or something, you know? Yeah. So it's different depending on the location. Well, see,
I've talked about this, like destination wedding. Weddings are expensive, but it's just like where the money goes. So the way we saw it was like, if you're going to spend, let's just say $80,000, $150,000 on a wedding, right? Which is what, is that sort of the average price that people probably spend or?
How much did you say? 80 to 100?
80 to 150 ballpark.
Yours is more?
No, I just think that it just depends on how many guests.
Yeah, because it's the per head cost,
yeah,
right?
It's per head cost.
So what I'm saying is like, if I, like the way we were seeing is like, we do something a bit more intimate.
Mm.
And then instead of spending it towards a larger wedding, you know, like same dollar value at the end, but covering the cost of people flying over, the accommodation for that period of time. The only big ask is that they have to drop everything, like you said, and then travel. And that's if people are willing to do that as well.
Yeah.
We know, we were talking to a few people and one of them, you know, she had a destination wedding and a lot of people couldn't make it.
Couldn't make it. Yeah.
And I think you have to sort of be okay with that as well.
Yeah, it's also very uncomfortable for the like good friends to like to pull out of it.
To decline it, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, I feel very destination weddings as like it's, maybe it's just me. I don't like to, like I got a rhythm, so I don't like to travel as much. Like I want to do my own thing. And when I travel, I kind of want to relax, right?
Mm.
So I have to go to a wedding. Like it's just not relaxing to me, man. Yeah. Like I feel so tired. Like that I have to fly over there and then like organize it and then come back before the weekend, like before the weekend ends and then get back into work. Like I'll be so exhausted for the next few days. So I just need to align it. And it's very hard to align it to, you know, my business as well. So I struggle with destination weddings. I don't even think I've been to any one of them.
Oh, neither have I.
I've been invited. Oh, no, yeah. You have. Oh, sorry.
No, I haven't.
It wasn't a destination wedding. It was like-
Oh, it was a wedding. Oh, Malaysia. Yeah. Tanya's wedding you're talking about. Yeah. But that wasn't a destination. Well, it was a destination wedding for me.
Yeah.
I had to travel to go to attend that wedding as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, actually you're right because talking to a few, you know, ex-colleagues, friends who, you know, were also invited from Sydney, a lot of them were hesitating to go and- Partly not because of the money, but because of the, hey, I've got to drop everything. I've got to take annual leave. I've got to go. And maybe I'm sentimental. Like I said to him, I said, your friend only really probably only gets married once. You should go. If you have the time and you have the money, you don't have any real genuine, I guess, excuses, whatever those excuses are, you should be there to support your friends.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I can understand why people wouldn't go either.
Yeah. Well, then what about you, Noel?
Well, when you said your friend only gets married once, I'm like, divorce.
No, that's why I say my friend most likely only gets married once because I understand people get divorced and get remarried as well, right? They get
married once or twice.
But no one goes into a marriage going, I might get married again. Like, it's always like, this is the one and only, right? Like, you know, how they perceive
it. How many times am I going to put my friends through this? No, for me, I mean, I'm a little bit more cynical. I'm probably closer to Viv, probably not as absolutely no on the whole marriage thing.
So do you find it a chore to go to weddings?
I enjoy weddings. I enjoy weddings where I don't have responsibility. I enjoy weddings as a guest. And if I'm not like a groomsman or anything, then yeah, it's fine. I enjoy weddings.
So why are you cynical about weddings?
I'm cynical about marriage in general because I feel like, I mean, just from a personal background, like, you know, being a child of, you know, divorce or just split parentage as well as like, you know, my entire dad's side of the family has a history of just failed marriages as well.
Yeah.
So just coming from that background,
you've
I'm
seen
like,
that other
I haven't
side.
Lived. Yeah, I haven't lived in that whole. I haven't bought into that whole dream of like, you know, married, fall in love forever, be somehow satisfied with your partner for the rest of your life, and still be in love with them until you die. Like that whole thing is like something I haven't seen or experienced growing up. So yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a harder sell for me. That's for sure.
I can understand that.
I can understand it.
Because talking to Iris as well, like I said last time. She definitely initially was no marriage. Like we candidly speak about it. And I've spoken to Davey about it a lot. I was like, Iris doesn't want to get married. And I accept that because I probably straddle the line between marriage, non-marriage, as long as we're in a good relationship, we're committed to each other, then it is. But I think it's more important to some people because it's a symbolic thing. It's like you read out your vows to each other and, you know, it's a form of like commitment to one another as well.
But her view has changed, right?
Her view has changed like, I don't think we've explicitly spoken about it. I think the birth of the child, birth of our child, is probably something that's, well, let's call it forced, but I don't think it's forced because I think we both are very happy to get married as well. I think for us, it's not that important, marriage, but I think it's important for our parents. Actually, funnily enough, my mum is quite liberal. My mum, she says, look, marriage or no marriage, I'm cool with it. You know, you two are in a loving relationship together and I will spoil you. I'll treat Iris like my daughter. My dad is, even though I know he doesn't never outright said it, and fuck, he's going to hear this as well, but I know my dad's more traditional. My dad will bite his tongue, like particularly traditional Asians, they'll bite their tongues if she's not officially a daughter, right? She's, you know, Iris would call them auntie and uncle, not mum and dad. What you can say to each other, you know, as a sort of in-laws relationship is different. So that's the way they see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're doing this whole marriage thing more so to, for the family. Like it's to sort of bring everyone together from a relationship standpoint. Yeah.
But I kind of get the other side where like Noel and Viv, it's, I'm not sure if you guys feel this way, but sometimes when you get married, it's kind of like you're setting yourself up for failure. What I mean by that is like, there's this picture where it has to be perfect.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? Like you're getting married, you have to love each other, you have to change the same way, you have to like grow old together, you have to constantly keep loving each other through the worst part and through the good parts. And it's hard, it's very tough because marriage shouldn't be treated like that.
Well, I think Noel's stance is more around he grew up in a single parent household. And this is why I'm saying it's a bit like Iris. Is like, you know, she lived in a household that was a bit more like disconnected. No divorce or anything, but certainly like, you know, dad was on the road a lot, spent more time with her mum. And I think it was just like if you didn't grow up with the nurturing, not that your mum wasn't nurturing, Noel, but I'm just saying it's like you might grow up in a household. Like if you grow up in a very loving household, and it's probably more of a childhood trauma thing, it's like, and I've talked about this really extensively with my parents. And they said, if you don't grow up in a sort of a loving household, then you can have a bit more cynical view of family, marriage, relationships, because you don't see it because your parents are the living example of a good or a bad relationship, because you see this from the time that you're born to now when you grow up as well. And I see that pattern with many friends who, you know, probably have that same sort of theme there. But on the flip side, I think I've also seen people who've come from, say, either broken families and stuff like that, I really want to get married because they want that as well. So it just depends on the person, I think, as well.
Yeah. Well, for me, for example, like I've grown up, my parents haven't, well, I didn't know that this was not a normal thing, but like I've only just seen my parents. They don't show affection. They don't speak to each other in like a quote unquote loving way or a westernized loving way. And they have a very different relationship because with my ex-partner, for example, I would see his parents like go on sunset walks and they would kiss each other goodbye in the morning.
Oh, really?
And I didn't know that was a thing with Asian parents.
Never like seen my parents do that.
Pardon? Yeah,
never seen my parents do that.
Yeah. But even still, like I just didn't see my parents really interact with each other. Like because I'm the oldest child, I would see if they did fight, for example, or if they had disagreements, like I would be in the middle of it. But even still, because of their age gap as well, they have very different views on relationships. And I think when they got married, it was probably love, but also convenience and, you know, migrating here as well. And so when I am with someone, I have noticed that they tend to have very stable family relationships and they are a lot more communicative in that sense as well. So, yeah, I can agree with seeing, yeah, I think parent relationships are very, very important to how you end up shaping your view on your own relationship and how you view marriage, relationships, friendships, etc.
Yeah. I think some people view, yeah, getting married as like, and going back to the whole, you know, my parents now, you are now my daughter or son or whatever. A lot of people view it as like, I got to deal with two sets of parents now.
Mm.
I have to get told off by two sets of parents.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like for the parents, it's like, now I have permission to be unfiltered towards you. Right. So that's the cynical view, which is to say, it's like, well, why the hell would I sign up for this?
Mm.
I have the option not to sign up. You feel that way?
Yeah. Like, there's two ways to look at it. You know, the first is you have a whole new family, you have another family, it's all legit.
And they're there to support you, but on the other side, you've got another family that's going to be on your ass all the time.
Wow,
everything we discussed in the other episode about parents, like you're dealing with that times two now.
I've never thought about it.
Neither
like
have
that.
I.
Like, I've never
thought about
a second family.
I never either.
I always just get thought about marriage as just marriage between us two.
Yeah.
Nothing to do about another family.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see it as I'm joining that family or the family's joining
me. But I think
me.
Being raised in a Western country like Australia, like obviously you and your partner, you both are Western raised. Iris is actually more Chinese raised, right? So she's lived half her life in China. So she's much more sensitive and aware of the cultures and the customs, and particularly with parents, how they think about this stuff. Because I'm the same as you. I brush it off. I'm like, no, it's not going to happen. Like, it's fine. It's all going to be all good. She's like, no, you don't know. And there's a lot of that sort of butting heads in the early days around that. And a bit like, what Noel said, which is like, why the hell am I like signing up for this thing? And I'm the same as you. I think I'm like, no, but you can't think of it this way. It's between us. But in her argument, or I think in a lot of like traditional Asian arguments, it's like, you're not just marrying between yourselves, you're marrying into families as well.
That's what my mom says to me as well. She's like, for example, if I went over to my ex-boyfriend's house, and she would be like, you can't keep going there because you're not married yet and you're giving too much of your energy away to their family before it's official.
Energy.
Yeah. So like, it's just you going to their house before you're married is like, you're not married into the family yet. And I think in their view, or in their eyes, like traditionally, when you get married, the female is their
marries
family.
Into the,
yeah, it's
the
whole their dowry family system now. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Dowry system. Yeah. Correct. Exactly.
So if I was going there, it's like, I wasn't married yet, but it would be bad luck for me to be going there because we weren't officially together. So I don't know what the meaning was, but I understand what you're saying in terms of like the little
it's
nuances.
It's much more intricate than us who've grown up in a Western society understand.
Mm.
It's hard, trust me, because I was learning this on the fly.
It's so stressful.
Like, wow. It's so stressful thinking about it.
It sounds so stressful because I'm like, just, man, do I have to live their life like what the way that they want us to live?
Because we live in a very individualistic society here, you know, Western country, and we're taught and grew up respecting each other's independence. Asian, obviously, mentality is very collectivist, particularly the family environment here, and there's a lot of rules, there's a lot of formalities and cultural requirements that you have to consider when doing certain things that I didn't know. I don't think my parents really told me that, because I think my parents are much more liberal, but they will still have tendencies, like, you know, one second they're more Australian about the way they go about things, but the next second they're much more Chinese about the way they and sometimes very hard because
it's so
I don't
confusing.
Know
yeah.
I don't know which way to navigate sometimes and just learning from Iris, because she's much more wise in this situation because she's seen it. And truth be told, there's been situations where she's numerous times where she said things and I've been like brushing it off going, no. And turns out it happens with my parents sometimes, you know, and not that it's a bad thing. It's just like, I'm just learning.
Yeah.
You know, we're all just like trying to figure it out. Like, for example, confinement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like lots of Asian countries do confinement, which is after you give birth, the mother has 1 month of just staying at home, recovering, don't wash your hair. You can't use air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
You have to eat very highly, like certain types of food. It is a full process. Mm-hmm. There are confinement centers in Asia for this shit, which is basically like, they're like 5-star hotels where you just go in and you just stay there for a month. It's wild. Like, yeah, you haven't got to this stage yet. Like, even thinking about it now, you will have to deal with confinement if you have a child as well.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because I reckon your partner's parents will.
Nah.
No?
Nah. Don't think so. Do you know why? Because my partner's parents don't even want the traditional tea ceremony.
What?
Yeah.
Tea ceremony is different to birth. My parents don't want the tea ceremony.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
So confinement is a big thing because confinement is to do with health. So I could be wrong because I don't know.
Well, it's
not
my problem anyway.
No, it is your problem because it's my problem, right? Right now, I got to deal with it. And that's because it's not a problem. It's a responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
you as the husband will have to caretake your wife, especially for that first month.
Just wondering how that would be. Maybe we should just wait until one of the siblings have it first.
Just to see it through.
See how. And then just let them decide.
It could be something you just slip into dinner. You're just like, oh, what do you guys think of confinement? You know, like, and then see.
I've never heard of that my whole life.
Yeah, confinement's a thing. I didn't really understand confinement until very recently. Like, I hear the word thrown around, which is 做月子, like in Chinese, that 1 month of, you know, recovery. And it's, yeah, like I heard my mum did it. Lots of people did it. I think a lot of even Koreans do it.
I just remember every time like each one of my siblings was born, I didn't see my mum for like, my mum for a month. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Like she was just in her room and every time she would open it, it would be for someone to take in food, come back out. And yep. I was like, where is she? Like,
I think it would be so amazing for my missus. She would be like on the phone, just playing games. Like, and getting food.
But she can't shower. She can't wash her hair.
You can't wash your hair for a month.
It's so uncomfortable, yeah. Especially after birth.
She would love the fact that she would just... She's like, I don't have to do anything. I could stink. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
But I guess the point going back to like yeah. confinement is I'm saying... you know, marriage, this sort of stuff, that like, especially, I can only speak from a Chinese experience, is very complex.
Mm.
There is so much complexity in terms of all this stuff that you have to, like, we don't get taught it. We don't know it. We don't see it.
They always say like Eastern philosophy, Western people just can never really grasp
yeah.
unless you've experienced it. You 100%. Can't explain Eastern philosophy to yeah. a Westernized person.
Yeah.
We're different because like we've had both the cultures and we can kind of understand the nuances around it. But I don't think it's just so much.
I can't understand it. Some of it. Like I'll give you an example. Shirley, my missus, was asked to not attend the wedding because... she had someone pass away in her family.
Yeah.
And she's like one of the best friends of the, you know, the bridesmaid. Mm-hmm. I can't understand that. I cannot.
I can't either.
I cannot understand that. I don't care about the tradition. I just cannot understand that because you, like, what is it then? What's the point of the
Western,
wedding?
Yeah, the Western value is like, oh, you should be there to support, right? And I think Asian, Eastern thinking is much more superstitious.
Mm. And just to provide context, the reason why, I think the reason why she can't come because of bad luck. Like, you know, someone passed away in the family, you'll bring the bad luck into the wedding. Family.
Well, like if someone passes away within a certain period of your wedding, like let's just say that, you know, knock on wood,
yeah,
you would have to push your wedding back, I think, in that case. Because if it's within that time frame, it's considered bad luck.
And how much money would that cost?
Yeah, well, we just...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
it can't happen anymore like that.
Yeah,
like,
but that can be enforced if you have probably a more traditional household.
I can see why it's so stressful for, you know, people in Asian countries to
yeah.
get married and they probably don't want to get married mm-hmm. as a result.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
It's so stressful for yeah.
you. It's stressful as fuck. Like, I don't know what Noel's thoughts are because you're kind of nodding and shaking your head like at the same time, you know, with this stuff. But
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of additional nuances you have to consider. Like it's not just
it's simple. Like you don't want to deal with it. You're like,
yeah,
it's sort of easier simple, just not to.
Exactly. It's sort of simple as like, I love my partner and like, you know, we're probably going to spend the rest of our
life. But what if your partner's cool. like, no, I really want to get married and I really want a child and you love her.
No, it would do it.
But you said that you don't want kids so that you wouldn't find someone that wouldn't have children.
Your deal breaker, you'd be like on the first date and you'd be like, do you want kids?
Come, there's
kids.
No strict criteria. I'm open to it.
I'm open, mate.
He's so single.
But I'm just saying, I don't want kids right now. Maybe if I meet someone who, you know, I do want to have kids with, fine, I could change my mind.
Yeah, oh,
I
mean, interesting.
Things aren't set. But I'm just saying, like, right now, hey, like, it is really expensive to raise a kid the way you want to. The one, if you want to give.
Tell me about everything. It, dude. 6 weeks' yeah. time, I'm going to be dealing with that 100%. Shit.
100%. Yeah. Like, I don't think, even if I wanted kids, I don't think I could afford to have kids in the city in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, marriage, I think there's a whole lot of other things that I don't want to deal with, like in-laws, pleasing them.
I think it's easier for the guys to please in-laws. I get it easy. Like,
why do we have to stress? Like, I don't know. I think
the mother-in-law, the daughter-in-law relationship for Asians is fucking hard. Because I'm stereotyping here and like, I don't know, I think all the female listeners will kill me, but like, women are much more, they think more intricately, more detail. We are simple creatures as men.
That's very true.
Right?
Yeah.
We think black and white. Women think in 100 shades of gray.
Yeah.
And so when they look at relationships, something that's that important, I think there's a lot more, like you, it's like Doctor Strange in Avengers. Like you think about like the millions of outcomes that can happen. And then you're like stressing out about how to approach each one.
Yeah.
And if you set the wrong foot, you could have a really terrible relationship, you know, in the long run. So as a daughter-in-law, I imagine you sort of would struggle a lot to try and, you know, please the mother-in-law, especially if a tiger mother-in-law who's difficult to please, right? I think you and I, we're just very carefree.
I've chosen the right girl because I have no problems whatsoever with that stuff.
No. I think it's just perception because I think Shirley's very carefree.
Yeah.
Her parents have been here for a very long time, and her parents are probably not as traditional. So I think it boils down to how traditional are the parents.
Yeah, I've chosen, so you've chosen the right
one, right? So they may not care for this stuff, you know, as well.
But the fact that it's a factor is already stressful enough.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact that you have to care about what your in-laws think.
No, the fact that when you date, and this is something that I never thought about, the same as you. I was like, when you date someone for them.
Mm.
But like in Asia, you date someone, you date them and their family.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Because my girlfriend's Shanghainese as well, right? So every time I say, oh yeah.
Fiance.
Your fiance.
Oh, sorry, yeah. My fiance is Shanghainese. I keep forgetting to say that. But everyone goes, whoa, Shanghainese. How is it?
Why?
Because they say Shanghainese.
Shanghainese women are stereotypically very,
very tough.
They wear the fucking pants.
Yeah, it's like tiger moms and like, you know.
Breadwinners. They make more money than the husbands.
Yeah.
Stereotypically.
Yeah.
And they just run the show.
Yeah, but my one, Shirley is complete opposite of that. You know, like, you know. Sorry, Shirley. Tomboy, like, you know, lazy. But
she's Western raised. She's Western raised.
She's going to kill me after this. Yeah. No, she's amazing. Like, yeah, so she's completely opposite. Western born. Yeah, Western raised.
We're talking traditional here, you know, like, but if you met a girl in Shanghai, maybe it might be a little bit different.
Yeah.
Right?
This episode is produced and brought to you by Social Wave. Social Wave is a strategic content marketing agency helping businesses grow revenue using video, podcasts, and SEO. Head on over to socialwave.com.au to find out more. Now back to the show.
So, kids. I used to want kids.
I remember you wanted kids
so bad.
So badly. You wanted kids like as soon as
25,
possible.
Yeah. 25, yeah. I was like, yeah, let's pop out a kid. Let's do it, mate. Let's do it. I'm ready. And now I'm 32 and I'm like, oh, is it really for me? Do you know why, though? It's because I've seen like friends and family go through having kids.
Mm.
And maybe because I am seeing so much stress and also like they don't have much control in their life right now. Just everything can change in a minute, right? One minute they just say, yep, I'm going to turn up to work. I'm going to work hard. And then out of nowhere, bang. Like
kid has a fever.
Yeah, kid has a fever. Then the whole week's turned upside down.
Mm.
Basically can't turn up to work, can't do anything. And basically they just have to focus all their time on the kids. But that sickness kind of drags out through the family. So it just hits one by one, each family member, and then it comes back sometimes. So therefore they're sick for like months.
Mm.
So it's just like, wow, there's no control. And I was like, whoa, I really don't want to sign myself up for that. It's scaring the crap out of me. And on top of that, there's a lot of other factors, but I can't see how I could bring up a kid in this type of environment with social media and the environment and the expectations and cyberbullying.
There's a lot of like debate right now, but is it even ethical to have a kid in this day and age, given our resource problem of a population?
Yeah.
Have you heard of the ethical topic around
I haven't, no.
What is it?
This is why I'm always like, do I want kids? But then it's also like, I don't know what's going to happen in 10 or 20 years time. It's just the idea around once the Gen Z population has a kid or they're thinking of having kids, what's the implications like on that child later on? And it's also the topic around is having a child, this is like not directed towards anyone because I know that you've got a child on the way, but it's like the conversation around that in the Gen Z space is if you have a child, is it just being selfish because you want a child or is it in the best interest of the child to come into this world during this time? True.
I think the onus is on the parents.
Kid. We should ask the kid.
The kid. No, I think the onus is on the parents because like, I think if you think about maybe our parents, maybe the parents were thinking something similar. They were like, this is a terrible time to bring our kids into society. Imagine World War One and World War Two. This is a terrible time to have kids and bring kids into society. They're all going to be like, you know, into war and this is the norm going to be like that. But I'm like, you know, I think we all just have our own versions of this is not a good time to bring a kid into society.
Yeah, but after the wars is when you're like, we got to repopulate. Let's get the fucking
That's why you have baby
kids.
Boomers, right?
But it's also just like the climate change issue right now is very detrimental on the world and just the timeline of where we are as well.
Yeah.
But we are fortunate to be in Australia or if you are like in Canada or the US, it's a lot better and you have more privilege to be able to bring a child into the world versus if you're in a less fortunate country. Like the floods going on or the hurricanes and whatnot, we're pretty protected here. And so having kids is not too much of an issue.
Yeah.
But if you were elsewhere, I think the debate around that is it's quite unethical to have a child, especially with poverty, inflation rates, climate change.
Well, I even said, and this was even before Iris got pregnant was I'd be happy to adopt.
Yeah.
Mm. I think there are enough kids in the world.
That's the other issue with adoption. Right. Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, I think, like you said, there's a bit of narcissism that you want something that's made from your own flesh and blood. And we did say we were like, even though it's very hard to adopt, we would adopt because there's a lot of kids who don't have families out there who would.
I get the narcissism thing. I get that you want to have a child that's a part of you and a part of someone you love very much. That's great. But then there's also the other side where it's like, this kid could be disappointing. It may not look as good as you want them to. May not look like you or your partner. They may have a recessive gene in your family. It might not look like either of you. You don't know. It's a gamble. And also because there's a lot of resources required to raise a child in this day and age. I mean, look, if I had a kid, I would probably love them unconditionally, but maybe 5% of me is probably going to be like, this kid better be a Nobel Prize winner. Mm. Yeah. Like, this kid better.
Really?
This kid okay, better.
See, I don't think cancer. That way. I was like, and again, I had lunch with my parents on the weekend and my mom said something. She started out having a rant about tutoring. She said, the fact that we put you through tutoring is one of the biggest regrets of her life. She said,
You're too smart.
The pressure that kids had back then and now still, she's like, it's ridiculous. She's like, you look at kids and they're just like, they're like robots. They're like, they're here to help parents hit milestones and checks. You know, like they're basically a badge of honor for parents. And a lot of Asian parents are like that. And,
oh, yeah. I remember those days where it's like
you go to Saturday school, then you go tutoring, you go after school tutoring.
No, what I mean is like you're like you meet someone, a family friend on the street, and then they're like, your son is so like.
Oh, the constant comparing.
Yeah.
Right? It's fucked up. Like, and so, you know, I think it's just over years of my parents just seeing, and they felt the pressure. They had a lot of family members feel the pressure. They even had family members question them why they didn't take us to even more tutoring than we already did. You know, they felt that sort of like, just because your circle of friends and family was like that. And she said, you know, if there's one thing, she's just make sure your child's happy. She says, like, as long as your child is safe and happy, fuck everything else.
Yeah. So that, like, I don't know if this is true, and I heard this from somewhere. I kind of remember where I heard it. There was this guy that said to, he said it on a video, and he basically said, I can't have kids because I want full control of my life. Mm-hmm. And when you have a kid, you would never have full control because you don't know how this kid's going to turn up. You could give him the best education. You can, treat him well. You can teach them well. You can bring him, give him the best childhood. But they could still turn out depressed.
Yes.
It's just the way they are. Their personality or it's in their genes or whatever it is, right? Yeah. So whatever you do, bad or wrong, you have no control over that life. So therefore, that's where I've kind of accepted that I need to first accept that I won't have control over
this kid. I've accepted that.
Yeah, that's where I can see. But this guy here, like Noel, hasn't accepted that
part. Yeah.
Because Noel was just like, you know, I can't, there's 5% of me going, you know, I don't want this kid to be like, what'd you say? A dumbass?
Look, I'm saying like this kid better be exceptional.
Yeah,
that's what exactly. I'm saying.
See, I think that's unfair on the kid.
Mm. Yeah, of course.
Because like, you know, it's like Asian parents doing this, which is, I brought you into this world. They guilt trip the fuck out of you. And my whole argument is like, you chose to have fucking kid. Mm. You chose to be pregnant and you chose to bring a human being into this world.
I didn't ask
where
to be here.
The kid, at what stage does the kid have even any voting power in this situation? Right. But that's not how Asian mindset works. Mm. Right. And going around like expectations and this sort of stuff. So I have like a allergic reaction to that now.
Yeah, you do.
That my kid, as long as my kid's safe and happy, and I genuinely believe like whatever they end up becoming, right? As long as they're safe and they're happy and they're not doing any harm to anyone, that's okay for me.
Mm. It's so hard, but.
And I can let that go. You know why? Because I don't think, I mean, I went through school and stuff and like, I didn't do anything stupid, but like I wasn't exceptional in school. I would have been the proverbial disappointment for most Asian parents from an academic standpoint. Yeah.
Yeah. Nah, you definitely. Went to selective school. Come on. You went to tutor.
I did okay in high school, but look, for an Asian standard, I didn't do fantastic. And most Asian, like Nobel Peace Prize, you know, like the equivalent, which is you have to be an overachiever to be good enough, right? And I think for my kid, it's just literally happiness and safety. That's it.
But it's very easy for us to say because we haven't had a kid yet, and you have one on the way, but we haven't grew up with them yet. So it's very hard to like, you know, see them go through the hardships or, you know, do things that are
It's going to lead to mistakes and...
Yeah, mistakes and, see, and be okay with that.
Yeah, like, it was funny. Same lunch on the weekend. And we had this family friend of ours send a photo to my mom of their kid. And their kid was wearing this helmet because his kid just started walking. And they were basically saying, look how... Essentially, it's like, look how smart we are. We are trying to avoid the kid from falling over and knocking their head. And my mom told me it was a funny joke. She was like basically saying she showed the photo to my dad and my dad laughed and he said, it's fucking stupid. And the reason why is because you have to let kids make mistakes. Yeah. You have to learn by like, all right, you touch something, it's too hot, move your hands away, mm-hmm. you won't do it again.
Yeah.
You can't prevent everything when it comes to kids as well.
So when they go into the real world.
Yeah, and I think the thing with not just Asian parents, just parents in general, overprotective parents, is that they need to have control.
Have control.
And they have to prevent everything when the actual thing you should be thinking about is not to prevent, but to safely allow them to make mistakes so they know not to make that mistake again.
And that's why Ken is the only one that's having a kid.
Yeah. You're the one that's fit for parenting.
That makes total sense.
But that's, you know, that's the thing. It's otherwise you could possibly have entitlement. You could have, you know, shelteredness, right? How many Asians we have on the show who come out and they go, as soon as I came out into the real world after high school, it's like I got slapped in the face because I just didn't even know what was coming. And I was like, that for me is the worst. That's the ultimate self-esteem, confidence, you know, identity issue, because you go out there and you just look real world, like hits you in the face, because you can't prevent that stuff. All you can do is just safely, like, you know, sort of groom them into this sort of stuff and get them to understand.
So I'm curious then, on the girls' side, you know, is that one of the reasons why girls are more attracted to, you know, white people, because they had to deal with that type of issues, or is it they're just attracted because they look better than us?
That's subjective.
I think from both experiences, though, like having dated Asian versus not Asian, it is more than just that element of like the traditions and like the pressures. I think it's also when you are in one or the other, like, yes, when you're with an Asian, the nuances are understood and like the little family things are understood and the cultural elements. But then when you're with a non-Asian person, even if they are still ethnic or they're just completely white, I don't know if I personally haven't done like completely white because the lack of nuance I can't deal with. But with other friends and stuff and their experiences, communication is a lot better because they've got that with their parents. And usually their parents have a better relationship, and so that gets passed on to them and how they treat you as well. And like thinking is different as well. I guess there's just so many different factors. Like,
it's cultural.
There's 50-50. Some elements are better than others. Like sometimes non-Asians just don't understand a lot of things and it can be frustrating.
And then you go to a Chinese restaurant and everyone orders for themselves. And then you're like, fuck this shit.
Eating a whole fish to yourself.
And like, you spit the bill perfectly at the end.
You don't get to fight over the bill.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting.
But Davey, like, why did you ask that question? What's your perspective on Asian men being less favorable than white men, or in your experience anyway?
I don't know, man. From my experience, I don't really have a problem with it at all.
But, neither do I.
Because, like, anyway, man, I didn't date that much. Look, I've had 3 girlfriends, I think, in my whole life, and I've had long-term relationships, so it's very hard, and I didn't really date any Caucasians. I know that I could have, but I just never tried. But I didn't have that problem because I never saw dating as something that I always had to do. Like, I was always, maybe because I was always in relationships as well, but I didn't have a problem of talking to people. I didn't have a problem talking to you if you're, you know, Asian or white.
You're
or
a very good communicator.
Yeah. I just can't pronounce things and can't speak for crap.
Spell and speak English.
So I just didn't have that problem of like getting in the spotlight and getting out of the spotlight. And yeah, I just never thought of it as that way where, it's a problem, like, for me. If I didn't think that.
Like, you never felt emasculated as an Asian guy, right?
I didn't feel like people looked at me differently. Yeah. I think people, I did remember, like, girls saying, like, you know, that non-Asian that said, hey, you look like you're good looking. But
I think it's also
did they say you're good looking, or did they say you're good looking for an Asian?
I was good looking, sorry. The word was like, you're attractive, as in like it's, but it's the personality. It wasn't. Yeah. I think it wasn't
physical, just physical.
It could have been, actually. You don't know, like, as a guy, right? Like, I don't even pay too much attention to that. So that's the thing. Like, I don't really think too much about my appearance or how other people perceive me.
But that's also the thing with, like, perspective. It's how you think of yourself, and that's just going to project out into the world and how you carry yourself.
Yeah.
If you think that people think of you as being emasculated, a lot of the time people will treat you like that because of the way you carry yourself or the comments that you make, right?
But it's also what comments people say to you.
Of course, yeah.
So I didn't have that problem because no one really said that.
But also we grew up hanging around mainly Asians.
It's true, though. I did.
So you mentioned someone, let's just, you know, again, just taking a stab, but like you're growing up in the eastern suburbs or North Shore or the Shire, and you're the only Asian guy.
You'll be pretty uncomfortable.
You know what? You'd be, yeah.
Which is yours.
Which is what Noel went through in the United States.
I didn't grow up in the North Shore. Okay? I grew up in a very diverse community. People from everywhere. All kinds of Asians as well, not just East Asians. As well as white, as well as, you know, European, as well as everything. So when I went to uni, it was definitely more of a white community, I guess, mainly just because, like,
I think that was the degree you did.
Yeah,
though, right?
It was. Yeah,
because like, UNSW is like very Asian.
The UNSW is very Asian. There just weren't a lot of Asians that were creative degree. But yeah, like, I think it's definitely more. It was definitely more noticeable for me when I was in uni, where I was like, I'm very aware that I am probably the only colored person in this group of friends. You know,
I guess like you chose paths that, like, put you in an uncomfortable situation where you
were... It's not even uncomfortable. Honestly, I thrived on it because, like, I grew up in a... I went to school with, like, a lot of Asians, and I had, you know, Asian friends, I had white friends, whatever, but...
Yeah.
So you never felt emasculated or anything
I didn't feel emasculated. I think I kind of enjoyed my difference because it made me more interesting.
You're more exotic.
Yeah, it was more exotic.
Yeah.
I was...
The, like, brown Asian.
I was the one brown dude at the party, and I'm like, cool. Like,
the token brown person.
The token. I was the token for a bit. It's a fun role to play sometimes.
Yeah, like you leaned into it, right? Yeah. Instead of, like, you know, rejecting it.
You take the advantage of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, like, I had this discussion with my best friend the other week, and we're talking about how, I guess, mixed race relationships, right? Like, what is your opinion on them? But also, we were both sitting with ourselves, like, debating, do we have this moral compass to have to date Asians because we need to stick with our race, right? And it's like, if you sit with someone that isn't Asian, you feel a little bit uncomfortable and unsure about if you're betraying you are
a traitor. Like, you know,
but it's like where does the line sit, and like how do you come to terms with that?
You're betraying your parents,
yourself, your identity, like passing on the lineage, or just, I think it's just this guilt of the emasculation issue.
But like, we're all humans. Like,
but the thing is, there is a lot of pressure on Asian girls where it's like, oh, like, fuck you. Like, why would you date a white person? Like, of course you're dating a white guy. Why aren't you dating in our race? It's like that same cluster of guys who are.
I'm guilty of that, yeah.
Really?
No, as in, like, you know, sometimes you make those judgments.
Yeah,
right?
That's
like,
true.
Just,
that's
it comes
true.
To your head. You know, I don't think there's any malice. It's just like, it's just a conclusion that you make. But I think I mean, I don't have a problem with it, you know.
I don't think we just see it enough. That's all. Because, like, I remember, like, 7 years ago, I went to the US for a trip, and there was plenty of Asians and white people couple. Like, it was so normal.
Okay, normalized. Just out of curiosity, how many of those couples were Asian female, white male versus Asian male, white female?
In America?
Yeah.
I distinctly remember seeing Asian men and white lady.
I've had that in the US as well.
I distinctly saw that, and I was like, damn, this is cool. Good on, dude. Good on this guy. Like, this is so cool. I just thought it was cool, you know? But yeah, I guess it's because it's not normalized here in Australia as much. Well, it's probably, I think it's starting to. But in the US, there's a lot more.
Well, it's like, I think about Kelsey, you know, one of our editors.
Yeah.
And she's half Filipino, half Aussie, white. And her mum is white. You instantly conclude, like, first time meeting Kelsey, I was like, your mum's probably Filipino and your dad's white. But it was the inverse around. And she was showing us photos, and I thought it was very cute photos as well.
Very.
But it's very, and it was like, we were like, whoa, like, this is great because it's such an abnormal thing.
It's like a trophy. Yeah. It's like, it's just like, wow. Holy crap.
Yeah, it's like a holy shit, like, Hades comment. You know, it comes every like 25 years.
I was like watching them, and I thought like those two people were celebrities. Like, they were walking down the escalator, and I was just like...
This was in the US.
Yeah, in the US. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. Like, I was so fanboying over it.
Yeah, you were fascinated, right?
Yeah. Because it doesn't happen in Australia as much.
It doesn't.
So, it's cool.
I mean, I think we're pretty backwards in that sense here.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just accept it. Like, it's... You know, people choose who they want to date. I'm like, who are you to judge who the fuck they want to date? Like, I don't think it matters as long as they're comfortable with the decision. But it's just, are the two comfortable with the decision? Like you said, you know.
Exactly.
The, like, Asian girl.
We were talking about it and we were just like, we can't really pinpoint what it is yet, but it's just like the ingrained background of.
Do you know what I think it is? it's like that dialogue you put in your head, but it's actually not really happening. Nah, so we talk about communication.
Yeah.
I was like, just talk to your freaking parents, right? Like if you talk to your parents and just go, what if I dated a white guy?
I don't think it's that issue though. Cause I, well, personally, my parents have no issue with it.
If you've spoken to him about
if it? I were, well, I remember when I was younger and I asked my dad, I was like, what if I didn't marry a Chinese man? He was like, you love who you love. Like, I don't care. As long as they treat you well, it's fine. But I think it's the societal dialogue of
it's society, man.
Yeah, like the expectation that Asian females have to uphold this duty because Asian men are so emasculated already.
That's so bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get that.
We are fed this dialogue where it's like, you shouldn't betray Asian men. Like, there are so many out there and it's like, you need to pick them up and bring them up.
That is so strange. That doesn't make any sense.
No, I can understand it. Like, I'm not saying I agree to it, but I can understand why people feel that type of hatred or like pain. Like the guys are,
but we live in the fucking 21st century. Like it's
yeah, but it's still happening.
It still exists.
That's the problem. That's why I'm so perplexed by it.
It's so like it's but I just have to bring on one point when which we were talking about this in the video just before the podcast is that like there are society starting to change, right? K-pop is massive. You see a lot of people that love K-pop. I don't like K-pop, guys. I don't understand it, but like the K-pop is really making Asian men look, you know,
attractive. It's cute. A trend now.
Yeah, you know, it's a trend. So, but back then, Asian guys were like, you know, either
sweaty nerds.
Nerds. Like, you know, Chooters. Bruce Lee or, you know, Jackie Chan or like just people
stereotypes,
that had.
Stereotypes, yeah.
That were like a joke, basically, except for Bruce Lee. But like Jackie Chan and everyone of us Asians.
I agree. I think that's a good point. Like Asian masculinity or representation of Asian masculinity in media has come a long way.
Yeah.
Since then, obviously, since like the 80s. Here's my gripe with like Asian attractiveness. I appreciate how much further the progress has gotten, but it's like to be attainable as an Asian male, you have to have abs. You have to be.
You
have to be tall. You have to have the jawline.
You
have the perm.
You have to have, you know, more Caucasian features, which is like a more, you know, Asians, are genetically, we're more, you know, slender. You know, you have to be more built. There's a lot of things like
smooth skin.
Yeah, there's a lot of
black hair.
You know, okay, so here's like
no hair on the face. Sorry,
Jimmy O Yang. It's like, could you be like Simu Liu or Jimmy O Yang? You know, like obviously one is more conventional because he meets the criteria of the more conventionally attractive male, whereas someone like Jimmy O Yang, who you know is attractive in his own way, might not get the same recognition because of the way he looks.
But you could be Big Bang.
That's right. You can be top.
Okay, so you're saying if you're a skinny Asian guy, you have to style yourself like a K-pop idol.
To be attractive.
To be attractive in the
eyes of the public. Well, I'm starting to see it because, like, it's funny. It's so bloody funny. So, like, I got this friend that they are, like, the partner, which is the female, loves K-pop. Loves it so much. Like, you go into her room, there's K-pop everywhere. You go into her computer, there's K-pop everywhere, right? And so slowly over the years, since COVID and like since 2019 all the way till now, you can see the change happening on the guy. You know, perm hair, you know, dress.
I know who you're talking about.
I just find it so cool, like how, like, you know, like the side is changing. I guess that's
the biggest one for me was the turtleneck.
The turtleneck. Anyway. He just needs to dye his hair white. Dye his skin white.
I'm halfway there, man.
Dye his skin white. He needs to look like pale.
Skin white? What do you mean dye his skin white?
He needs to look pale, you know?
Pale.
Pale.
He just needs to avoid the sun for like a year.
Yeah. And then that's it. He's got the K-pop style.
That's the other thing. You need to look pale. Don't get me started on colorism in, you know, in Asia as well.
Yeah. No, but like, oh, look, I traveled in Asia, you know, this is 2019. And I think definition of male attractiveness is very different in every Asian country.
Yes. That's
going
very
to China.
True.
Their definition of male attractiveness was different to Korean.
But also depending on where you go in China.
Depending on where you go. So it was funny. I was in, we were just watching a video, Blondie in China yesterday. And she's, you know, blonde Aussie who travels around China. And she was in Hanzhou, which is a city near Shanghai. And it's known to have very good looking people around. And apparently there's this like shopping mall complex area where the photographers hang out. And all they do is just hang out until a good looking person comes along and they take photos of them. Mm. Like without asking for permission. It's a thing. And then I was sitting there on the couch with Iris and I was like, that is the creepiest shit I have ever seen. And she was like, no, 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 it's a compliment. Like, if you get picked up by one of these photographers and they want to take your photo, it means you are either really fashionable or you're really, really good looking.
Mm.
And I saw some of these photos and I was like, this is so different to like Western standards of like how good you look, particularly with the guys, right? And very different to the Koreans. And then I imagine going to like other Asian countries would be the same. Like the Japanese would be like super different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Koreans are obviously their thing. And then you got like Western Asians as well. So I think we just have Western lenses in terms of how we see things.
Apparently,
when you go to Asia, different.
Yeah, when you go to Asia, like I went to Vietnam. Apparently, being fat is actually good looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It means that like...
You're wealthy. You're doing well.
Yeah. You've got money.
You can feed yourself.
Apparently, that's what I heard. Wow. I found it very funny. And I was like, oh, then I must be good looking.
Give me that green card.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a while because the Western lens has existed for so long and it's only just... We're surrounded by it.
Like,
exactly. Like it's going to take maybe a couple more years before it's normalized that maybe the ideal standard of male beauty or beauty in general doesn't have to be white-centric. And variety is good. Variety is good for everyone. Really.
That's what I mean. Like variety, I was thinking growing up, besides K-pop, the other one was probably like Taiwanese guys were considered very good looking. Because they had that sort of westernized...
I didn't know about Taiwanese guys.
Taiwanese HK. Pop stars.
Yeah.
Hong Kong pop stars. You know, like Lee Hom and these guys were considered very good looking. Nicholas Tse, Hong Kong.
That's all the Asian like culture, right?
No, but like they were considered attractive for Asians in Western countries.
Mm.
So like the girls I knew in high school were very into these guys as well. You know, and they looked really different. Like anyone goes Googles like Nicholas Tse and like Lee Hom, some of these guys quite different.
It's like Henry Golding, style. Like he's got that Western HK look.
Yeah,
he's got
the very Western look. Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's half white. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, is he half white? Yeah. I just love his accent.
The British accent.
Can you do an impression?
No, no, I can't. No, I just think it's pretty cool. Like it's some Asian guy and he's got the most like strongest British accent. Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
So it's pretty cool.
So have you guys seen the movie Love Hard on Netflix?
No.
So Jimmy O Yang. And the girl from the Vampire Diaries.
It's the guy that like pretends to be catfishes.
Yes, exactly.
So the story behind that is that this Asian guy, you know, Jimmy O Yang, impersonated a good-looking guy on Tinder.
A good-looking mixed-race Asian one,
yeah. Yeah, to get a date with that person and catfish that person. And so that spoke to him for quite a long time and then he ended up like, you know, ghosting that person. And then that girl ended up tracking him down. And then found out it was him.
Yeah. But then they had this arrangement where the guy that he was pretending to be turns out to be his friend.
Oh.
So then she's like, I'll help you get my friend if you just pretend that you're my girlfriend so I can appease my parents.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of nuances that are going on. Everything we're discussing. Yeah.
But it's a chick flick. They end up falling in love and it was a really...
They're soulmates, yada, yada, all of that kind of stuff. But
the overarching theme of it is...
The overarching messaging is like, it kind of shines a spotlight on, you know, a more typical Asian masculinity, like, you know, Jimmy O Yang being... more acceptable and like showcasing the value of that kind of masculinity, which is great. But then the other side of the story is like someone who looks like Jimmy O Yang has to go and catfish to even just get a chance with someone like Nina Dobrev, who's a conventionally attractive white woman. I see the good intentions, but it's also like, why couldn't he just be himself in the first place and still just be entertainable?
But it wouldn't be a chick flick then.
It's still a chick flick.
because it's such a big platform, it's doing more damage overall to people than it is doing good.
For me, I just found it very entertaining. I actually loved that movie. I don't know why. I just thought it was funny, yes.
But well, you also like Bling Empire as well.
Yeah, I like this.
I love it too, man. I feel you. Like, I just want to get to a stage where, like, you can be an Asian dude, but you don't have to be conventionally masculine. You don't have to be, you know, you can still be the lead and still fall in love with, you know, the attractive female star without having to have this contrived plot about catfishing just to be validated as a person.
But you got to get the point that movie there wasn't to inspire people. It was just
it was a rom-com.
Because I was so entertained when I watched it. I think it was during the holidays and I like literally went, wow, this is... I've watched it just to put it on the background and I actually sat down and watched the whole movie because I thought it was very funny and entertaining. But I don't know why I thought it was entertaining, but it just was.
Mm.
Anyway, very good movie. If you haven't seen it, recommend it.
I think that's a good spot to wrap up then. Thanks so much for listening to this episode, guys. If you have any other suggestions for topics that you'd like us to cover and unpack, please DM us on our socials at Level Asian Pod. Otherwise, you can send us an email at contact@levelasianpodcast.com.
See you later, alligator.
Thanks for listening to the Level Asian podcast. Make sure you subscribe and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed the episode. And why not share it with friends and family who might enjoy it too? Also, make sure you head over to levelasianpodcast.com to join our email list and to receive the latest updates and get notified when the next episode drops. If you know a great guest we should feature, email us at contact@levelasianpodcast.com or DM us on our socials in the show notes. Catch you on the next episode.